Welcome to the podcast, Chatting with Brad and Doug. This is Doug speaking.
And this is Brad speaking.
And today's episode, we are going to be focusing on George Costanza from Seinfeld. What do you have to say for yourself about George Costanza, Bradley?
Well, I mean, he's one of my, my favorite characters from TV. I find him very relatable, which is kind of a bad thing. I would say probably not a great thing that he's relatable, but he's the second lead on the show behind Jerry, and he's a ton of fun. You know, his antics are some of the most memorable stuff on the show, and his absurd schemes and his constant trying to get even or trying to have the upper hand on other people. Is just frankly hilarious, and the extent to which he will go to be lazy is, in fact, so hilarious that he ends up outdoing himself a lot of the time, and he works so hard to be lazy, he should just have worked in the first place, and I just find him just so much fun.
I mean, there's so many things of what you said that, I mean, we could literally devote an entire podcast to, but, so I guess we'll get to all of it throughout the show, particularly his laziness. I mean, just one thing that came to mind is he's a very cheap, lazy individual who doesn't really like to work. He doesn't have many aspirations. They refer to him as Biff a few times, which is a reference to Death of a Salesman, which is a very fitting description. But yes. I guess before we get into...
Yes, it's very fitting.
I mean,
as opposed to Biff from Back to the Future.
Definitely not that Biff. Biff from Death of a Salesman. And that's insulting to Biff from Death of a Salesman. Yeah. The fact that they compare George Costanza to him, I guess you could say. But, I mean, yeah, I guess before we get, too deep into specific elements of George, I mean, he's obviously, as you said, Jerry's... he's kind of second in command in Seinfeld. He's, Jerry's, really good friend.
His best friend.
His best friend. They go back a long way.
Back to high school, at least, middle school maybe.
And, in many ways, he's Jerry's confidant, his wingman, his kind of go-to.
I don't see him doing much wingmaning.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. He's got his own problems with his own life, so, I mean... I don't know. I mean, no, you're absolutely right. But, I mean, yeah, that's kind of what George Costanza is all about in the show. He's a joy to watch. I guess just a little, my own personal history with the show is, I mean, obviously Seinfeld goes back a long way. I'm sure we all have memories of Seinfeld being on, back during the height of its, popularity and whatnot, but it was really you who got me into Seinfeld. And, so I give you due credit and thanks for that, because I mean, my life has never been the same after watching this.
For good or for bad.
For good or for bad. And like you say, he's kind of relatable in the sense that I always say that George is a character who we're all a little bit like George in some way. There's a little bit of George in each and every one of us. And as you said recently, sometimes some people have a little bit more George in them than most other people, or some other people, or they would like, so.
Yeah, because, really, George, he's not a bad guy, but there's no redeemable qualities. There's nothing to look up to in George. I guess that's the way to put it. He's not bad, but there's you're not looking up to him in any way. He's kind of in it for himself, and he doesn't do anything out of malice. It's all him trying to improve himself in some way or improve his situation, how he thinks it'll go, for example, if you remember the Hamptons episode where Jerry and Elaine and Kramer see his girlfriend topless, walk around before he sees her topless, and then Jerry's girlfriend sees him naked and then goes to great lengths to try to see one of these two girls naked, that it's just, he has some strange sense of fairness about the world. And he does everything he can to make that happen.
I just thought of two things as you mentioned, as you went into that, particularly in the Hamptons episode, that, I mean, yeah, he's not a, like, he doesn't do any, like, sometimes it his plans kind of, you know, hurt the women he's going out with. You know, but, like, it's nothing...
Sometimes.
Sometimes more than others. I mean, particularly...
Poor Marissa Tomei.
And Susan, of course, who...
Well, yeah, obviously Susan.
I mean, we could get into her in a little bit, but, you know, he doesn't really pay attention to his... He doesn't... I guess his vision of reality is a little bit off, wouldn't you say? Maybe a little bit?
I would say more than a little bit off.
He's a little bit...
It seems like George thinks that the world is completely out to get him, and the only way he's going to improve in life is by taking something from someone else.
Yeah, and we had spoken in a previous podcast about being careful not to act out in fear, because that can often backfire. Like in the Hamptons episode, he is so afraid that Jerry's girlfriend saw him right after he got out of the pool and shrinkage occurred, and so he's worried that people are going to be talking about him not being so well endowed, and so he almost goes to great, like, that's what he's worried about, and so he's acting on that fear and doesn't...
Yes, you know. So he goes to great lengths to make as many bad puns as possible. That's about the extent of his plan.
I don't remember any of the puns off the top of my head, but I'm sure it was, like, classic George, like, you know, just inappropriate off color and just not... If there was ever a time he needed to not be George.
There's a lot of things he like would talk about how nice the pool was. And he said, but it always is sad, you know, how some things go in and are normal sized and come out and tend to be a lot smaller. Okay. He does stuff like that.
Yeah, no, because, I mean, he's got his insecurities and doubts. I mean, I don't know if he's trying to necessarily overcompensate so much. He's a very, like, fearful individual who acts on those fears and it, you know, it backfires. Like, so many of his plans are out of, you know, his, you know, out of fear and, you know, doubt and insecurities, and he's got a few, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't think of any specific other quotes from that off the top of my head, but that's just... Well, I guess the one thing that I can remember, always remember from that episode is when they're commenting on, you know, seeing George's girlfriend topless. And, for someone who complains about his love life, George certainly dates a lot of beautiful women. And so she's walking around without her top on, and everybody's has some exclamation, and Kramer yells out, Jerry who yells out, Boutros, golly. Which is really funny. For those of you who know your UN Secretary Generals, he was U.S. Secretary General at the time. But yeah, I just remember that just being absolutely hilarious.
I mean, that was a great episode. There are obviously a lot of great Seinfeld episodes, and it's like, you know, the fact that, I mean, I didn't really watch the show when it was on the air, but, like, I do remember
well,
it being
yeah,
on.
You were all of 9 years old when it got canceled.
Wouldn't have...
Or remembered. Not when it got canceled, when it stopped.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would have understood what was going on, and it's, like, back then, but I'm certainly glad you introduced it to me when you did, and, again, yeah. It's never been the same again, so...
Yeah, so I guess one thing that, you know, just interesting to think about is, you know, how George's... a remark to Doug that I think that George at some point embodies every single one of the seven sins. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, with his fiancée Susan, you know, when it comes time for him to buy wedding invitations. Well, first of all, Susan is a pretty wonderful person. She's rich, she's beautiful, and she's got all of her act together, and she loves George for him and all of his craziness.
She comes back to him after they kind of stop seeing each other, so obviously forgive
him,
too.
Yeah, I mean, after all the terrible things that George does to her, so, like, he, you know, Kramer burns down her father's cabin in upstate New York. George accidentally outs her father, if you recall that, that he had, like, he was John Cheever's lover. If you remember that episode.
Vaguely.
There's a lot of terrible things that happen to Susan because of George. And then, like, a year later, they get back together. She becomes a lesbian for a while after that. So basically, they get back together and get engaged when they get back together. And, George also gets her fired from her job. As a network executive, but so they get back together, and they go to pick out wedding invitations, and George, being George, wants to spend as little money as possible on the wedding invitations. It's pretty standard George fare, wouldn't you say?
I mean, he's cheap and lazy to the max. I'm sorry, I hate that expression, but he's very, very lazy and very, very cheap.
Yeah, and so they get the least expensive envelopes. And he's also so lazy that he doesn't want to help out Susan with the invitations. So Susan ends up doing all these invitations herself, and the invitations are so cheap, the glue on the envelopes has turned into poison after sitting in the warehouse for years. And so Susan dies of being poisoned. And it's a combination of George's laziness and cheapness that kills off his fiancée, which is just kind of incredible.
It's typical George, but it also goes back to the old saying, cheap is dear. You end up paying for it eventually anyway, so...
Yeah. Just so utterly ridiculous. The things that he'll do just to, he wants to maximize his bang for the buck in every situation. He wants to get everything he can out of a situation, I would say.
There's this quote that I like. It happens to be in a Robert Heinlein book, but and you'll see where I'm going with this in a second. But he says, "Progress is made by lazy people who want to make their lives easier." And I love that quote. Obviously, I remember it enough to quote it. But I would say that in the case of George Costanza, his laziness leads to no progress. His life never gets better. I mean, he has no dreams, aspiration, doesn't
he
work.
He does go from working as a real estate agent to working as a scouting director for the Yankees.
I mean, but if you remember, I mean, obviously you do. I mean, we were talking about this before the show. But yeah, so that's almost in spite of George. That's in the episode where, he does the opposite of everything he would usually do. So in a sense, by changing his ways, that's when he gets ahead in life. That's what I thought the episode showed very brilliantly. It's like if he does what he usually does, if he kind of, acts on his base or pretty, his immediate desires and urges, it's just, he never gets further in life. He keeps, kind of ruining his relationships. But if he kind of does the opposite of that, if he works to not do what is, natural to him, kind of like becoming more than just a man, as they say in the new Batman films, that's when, what you pointed out, he gets the job scouting for the Yankees. That's when he... I think he gets two dates in that episode, not just one. I mean,
yeah. Well, he walks up to a girl in a restaurant, and just says, "Hello, my name is George. I'm unemployed and I live with my parents," and that's how he introduces himself, and it works. When he goes for a job interview with George Steinbrenner, he talks about all the questionable moves he's made as owner of the Yankees, and good old George Steinbrenner admires his moxie. So it's just pretty, pretty crazy. It's, that in the episode where he decides to stop acting the way he normally would is when you see the most advancement in his character in pretty much the entire series.
It's one of the, that's what I took out of the episode. I mean, when he finally, it's like if, when he stops acting like George, I mean, obviously we love it when he acts like George, I mean, it, again, there's a reason why he's kind of just neither here nor there in life. He just kind of is fated to, suffering the consequences of his own kind of, poor based decisions. And we talked about him being cheap and lazy, but it also comes down to him not liking work or having any kind of work ethic. He doesn't really produce. He's not let's just say if Ayn Rand were around to see George Costanza, she would probably call him a lazy parasite or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just thinking about Costanza and all the rest. I also think it's interesting his relationship with his parents.
I mean, his parents
are just something that's incredibly crazy.
I mean, his...
His parents are absolutely insane.
I would hate to live with those parents. I mean, I would never want to live with George Costanza's parents. I mean, he actually fears them getting divorced in one episode because that would mean having to invest more of his time, which is so precious to him, which is why he can't, you know, work and produce and that kind of stuff. So, I thought of that, like, one episode. But, yes, his parents are absolutely dysfunctional. There's a reason, I guess, partially why George is the way he is today. And I think his parents are partially to blame.
They complain about everything. There's nothing that ever goes right. And they also, especially his dad, I forget the character's name, but Jerry Stiller's character.
Frank Costanza, I think his name is.
Frank Costanza, yeah. There you go. He has the same kind of elaborate, awful schemes that George does a lot of the time. He's got the bro episode, which is kind of ridiculous and pretty funny. Do you remember the stop short maneuver?
Maybe. Could you remind me about that?
So you're driving in a car with a girl,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you've got to stop suddenly. So you throw your hand out to restrain the girl, and you strategically place your hand.
So
that way when you come to a stop, she moves forward into your arm, and you can understand how that goes.
I mean, obviously, we're two gentlemen, so we don't really do the stop. We don't need to do the stop short maneuver. I mean, it's like we've got standards and values and morals, but that's
a stop short maneuver.
Oh, my goodness. But that's I'm just kind of, I didn't remember that part. So I was just kind of like thinking and meditating on that for a second.
Well, I'm thinking of Jerry Stiller doing such a thing.
I'm not surprised. I wouldn't put it past Frank Costanza.
He gets, just like George, they both get angry over pretty minor things.
Petty, I would say.
Like the TV Guide collection, infamously.
When you were talking, I was like, oh yeah, Frank Costanza's I kind of thought we were like going to get into that, but yeah, yeah.
And just how incredible, these kinds of things, and then he's a man in his 30s living with them on top of it.
That's
His parents ground him on a regular basis, too, which is funny.
That sounds like Dante. Worse than Dante's hell.
Which circle?
Any circle. We were talking about his hopes and dreams. It's like you would think that he would at least have enough hope and dreams to be out of his parents' house by 30. I mean, but that just goes to show you what happens if you're not planning a little bit ahead in life.
Well, he was, and he got fired from his job for trying to get back at his boss.
Yeah, he always has to, get revenge and get back for all these, petty squabbles. And...
Your audio cut out for a second there, so I didn't know you were talking.
Oh.
One of the things that, I notice, is he'll fly all the way out to Ohio to get revenge on a guy, and he'll fly there, buy a bucket of shrimp just to make a comeback on a guy. I thought that was pretty entertaining, don't you think, Doug?
I mean, yeah, the episode you're talking about obviously is when they're at some kind of board meeting and George is eating shrimp and somebody makes a comment on it, and he just gets so, the entire episode is literally devoted to what kind of a comeback line he can have, and it's just it's George being George doesn't want to, get over it, move on, stop grinding axes, leave it, nobody cares, why should you get on with your life?
Right, and so what's funny is, the guy, George is eating a bunch of shrimp, and the guy says, hey, George, the ocean called, and they're running out of shrimp. All right, that's kind of funny. That's off the cuff pretty funny. But then George goes to great lengths to be able to have him say the exact same line again and to retort with, well, the jerk store called, and they're running out of you. And then immediately the guy comes back to him and says, oh, well, it's no big deal. You're their all-time leading product. And George just... is devastated that he just goes to this whole length for something so petty as having a good comeback for this guy.
But also, he wanted to have a comeback in the way that suited his own needs. Like, you know, he didn't... Like, you know what I... Like, does that make sense, or am I making sense? Like, the idea...
You're not making sense.
All right, I will explain. It's like, George, like, he tells his... Jerry and Elaine and Kramer, like, his plan to, you know, get the guy to make a comeback. So that he can say, the jerk store called. And they're just like, that's stupid, George. You should say something else. And he's like, no, it's jerk store. It's like, he doesn't want to... come back with a retort that is most effective. He just wants to come back with a retort that suits his own needs, that he likes. So it's not even
that
the best
he came up with. Yeah,
exactly. So he's not even like, for all of his obsession with you know, his very Captain Ahabian and obsession with getting revenge, he doesn't even want to do it in the most effective way possible. Like, he's not, he wants to do it in the way that he wants to do it. And so it's not really effective because, it's, you know, as you say, like, he, like, the guy comes back at him with the quote. So for all his time and effort and energy spent in coming up with that retort, it's stupid. It doesn't mean anything.
Of course, it's provided you and me with a great retort from when we can't think of anything else. So if somebody insults you or me, you can always just go back, well, the jerk store called and they're running out of you.
Yeah, And do you remember what George says after the guy says you're their all-time bestseller?
No, I don't remember.
Well, Kramer said you should just say you slept with his wife, and then George actually says that. And the guy's like, my wife's been in a coma. Oh. No, you know what? Like, terrible. You said that we have a retort. You and I wouldn't even be bothered with that. We would just be like, they're idiots. Like, why should... I don't care. Like, I'm getting on with my life. Like, that's what you and I would do. That's...
Well, we would say something in the moment if we could.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, you move on. You get... You carry on with your life. It's, I mean, I brought this up with you before the show, but it's like that, the quote by Nietzsche that, you know, if you... Whoever lives for the sake of combating their enemies, you know, has, you know... ensures that the enemy is around for them to combat. So in other words, if you keep, you know, wanting to keep your feuds and squabbles and, you know, if you want to keep getting revenge on somebody, then you're ensuring that they're around for you to get revenge on. Just move on. You know, like,
to have a bit of a digression for a second.
Digress away.
Okay. My philosophy professor that I had back in college said probably the most brilliant thing about Nietzsche I've ever heard. He said... You know, now, you know, it was an intro to philosophy course, because I'm not a philosopher.
And neither am I.
And so I was taking this philosophy course as a liberal arts requirement, and so he says, you know, we're going to be reading Nietzsche now, and you will feel one of two ways about Nietzsche. Either it will totally change your life and be absolutely amazing, or you'll go, eh, it's okay.
Which camp were you in, out of curiosity, Brad?
I was in the meh camp.
I hear you.
I was in the, okay, it was Nietzsche. Yeah, okay, he's got some things to say. God is dead, all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a list of quotes that kind of has a few few Nietzsche quotes up there, but I'm not really thinking of any, because, like, I guess I'm just still sort of, you know, knee-deep in George, but do they have any, you know, those, like, philosophy of, like, you know, Batman or Watchmen, like, do they have any philosophy of Seinfeld books?
I don't think so. I think Nietzsche would probably actually be a pretty good philosopher for Seinfeld with, there's a lot of nihilism going on.
Yeah, definitely in a few different areas, I would say.
Yeah, it very much focuses on the here and now and, you know, maximizing benefit here and stuff like that. I think there'd be some stuff from Nietzsche that would apply.
Oh, well, there's this one sort of Nietzsche quote that I think applies to Susan. You were talking about Susan kind of coming back to George, even though he's done horrible things to her. And obviously Susan goes against this, but I'm not hurt by the fact that you lied to me. I'm hurt that I could never trust you again. And clearly Susan should have come a point where she says, all right, I don't trust George ever. I don't trust him. Never again.
Yeah. I mean, that relationship is just so screwed up. Like, you can't even think, like, just, there's just so many things that George does to ruin Susan's life. Let's see, they were together in season 4 or 5 of Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look up the episodes and see what I can remember. Okay, so the Bubble Boy episode.
Oh, that's another worth examining, but we'll hold on to that. But yeah, keep going with what you were saying about Susan.
And so that's when Kramer accidentally ends up at the cabin with Jerry's ex-girlfriend, and they burn down the house with the Cuban cigars Susan's father gave to George. Let's see. And then the aforementioned that her father was a lover of John Cheever. Let's see. Yeah, and then they have the opera one with Joe DiVola there together. But there's nothing terrible that happens there. Let's see, and I think that's when they break up. Is after the opera. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah, there's just consistently bad things that happen between, specifically Kramer, that Kramer does a lot of terrible things to Susan.
Let's put it this way. Again, this goes back to me not being that great of a human being. I mean, or maybe I'm selling myself short here, but, like, if I had, like, I mean, if somebody, like, had this much of an effect on me in my life, like, if just nothing but bad things happened, like, I would kind of take that as a bit of a foreshadowing in a sense. Like, you know, just like, okay, every time I'm around this person, something bad happens. How many times am I going to keep pressing my luck before something truly awful happens? And it's like, yeah. You know, maybe, like, when George came back to Susan, Susan should have said, you know what, like, I got a bad feeling about this. Let's just leave this alone in the past. Yeah. You know, like, just at a certain point, it's like, yeah, like, you know, George isn't that bad of a person, sure, but bad things happen when you're around him. And it might not necessarily be personal. It's just that, you know, I love my life too much to want it to be ruined by you, so to speak. And again, this is more, like, we're getting very philosophical and political in this. I mean, but, like, yeah, like, I just think that at a certain point, you know, if somebody is that much trouble, then it comes down to, well, am I going to keep pushing my luck, or do I love my life too much to really risk, you know, like, something bad happening? Like, yeah, worst case scenario, I'm wrong, but, you know, I would, you know, rather take a chance on my own gut instincts or feelings or thoughts about this than really, like, you know, say to myself, oh, I should have listened to myself sooner, which is what Susan probably should have done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, those are some very good points there.
I mean, there's obviously an episode. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I've been thinking about.
Yeah, yeah.
No, go for it, Doug.
I mean, I was going to mention the Bubble Boy episode and, like, you know, just like, yeah, George in one episode is talking about, like, burning bridges and whatnot. And it's kind of funny because, like, you know, obviously, like, he tries to repair that bridge and it ends up not working out well for, you know, Susan. And maybe she shouldn't have let him repair the bridge. But, I did interrupt
maybe,
you.
Maybe he shouldn't have listened to that horoscope, Doug.
Yeah.
The whole repairing bridges horoscope.
Yeah, just a side note. I kind of, I got, like, I sometimes go to Brad for help if I'm, you know, overcome by fear. And it's like sometimes I take things, you know, to heart or take things too literally. And one thing that, like, my mom read me a horoscope this week, and I'm like, so it's like I go to Bradley. I'm like, Bradley, are horoscopes real? Or is astrology, like, is there something to it? And what'd you tell me, Bradley?
Well, I mean, it was in text form, so I didn't get to expound too directly on it, but I basically said that I thought it was a bunch of BS.
It's not for you.
It's not for me, and it is for people who are not devoted enough to pick up a religion and not lacking the dedication to learn science. That it's just kind of an easy way to get some order to the universe, and the whole thing just kind of silly, because the whole stars thing is absolutely meaningless.
Yeah, I mean, I have, like, a friend who's, like, into, like, psychology and, like, science and that kind of stuff, and, you know, she's just like, well, I just think it's kind of interesting. And, yeah, it's, like, I can understand its appeal or something interesting about it, but, like, you know, yeah, there's lots of other, like, I don't know, it's like, there's some quote that says, you know, beware of the person with one book. Somebody said that.
Yeah. Do you know what Yeah, especially if that book's Twilight.
Or the Okay, there you go. Yes, that's what I was going to say. Twilight. So
do you know what Lazarus Long says?
What?
About astrology?
What?
He said the best way to judge the quality of a scientist, ask how he feels about astrology.
We'll have to return to Lazarus Long at some point soon.
At some point very soon, I'm hoping.
Yeah, we gotta get Robert Heinlein back into... Bring him back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did want to talk to you about the whole Bubble Boy episode, because I think it's totally epitomizes George's need, his pettiness, and almost need for very, like, shallow revenge, and ineffective revenge, almost. Like, just the need to be so self-righteous all the time, and about such little things.
Yes.
So that's worth discussing, I think, a little bit.
Right. So George is playing Trivial Pursuit, one of my personal favorite games, with this Bubble Boy, who... This is one of those episodes that could only happen before cell phones and the internet was a big thing. And so, like, Jerry is following George up the highway, and George is driving too fast and whatever, and so George ends up at the Bubble Boy's house, who is supposed to be being visited on his birthday by Jerry. Jerry can't find them, and George turns out to be... And the Bubble Boy ends up being... They never show him, but obviously someone who's adult and is a real jerk. And so George plays him in Trivial Pursuit, and they ask some pretty easy question, and the answer is clearly the Moors, which were a group of Islamic invaders into Spain.
It's like North African fighters, yeah.
Yeah, they invaded from Morocco into Spain.
Yeah. El Cid fought them and whatnot.
Yes, El Cid, and if you remember your Roland stuff from French class, if you ever took that, that kind of stuff all happened with the Moors. And on the question card, however, it said moops. And George, being such a stickler for the rules and wanting to get any chance he could to beat this Bubble Boy... tells him that, we can't count the question because you didn't say what was on the card, even though what was on the card is obviously wrong.
Like a typo or something like that.
Yes. Yes, because, for example, like, P is right next to O on the keyboard. So it's just, it's a funny-sounding word that you can use, as an answer that looks like a typo in Trivial Pursuit. It's funny because I was playing Trivial Pursuit with my family recently, and we had a question about, we were playing classic rock Trivial Pursuit, if you can believe such a thing exists, Doug.
Oh, I would totally win that game.
Well, yeah, you have to play against me sometime.
Oh, Bradley, it is so on.
And so the question was, who's on the cover of Fleetwood Mac's Rumours? And... if you have some inclination of what the members of Fleetwood Mac look like, it's pretty obvious that it's Mick Fleetwood and Stevie Nicks are on the cover. But the question was wrong, and it had another member of Fleetwood Mac on there. And I tried to invoke the Moops rule, saying that whatever was on the card had to be the right answer. And, that didn't go over so well. But I thought the Moops rule would save me in that case.
I mean, when life calls for the Moops rule, you gotta invoke the Moops rule.
Gotta invoke the Moops rule.
Yeah. Remember that, boys and girls?
Yeah, and it's just so silly that George is so... has to beat the Bubble Boy at Trivial Pursuit.
Like, it matters to him that much.
Right. That,
the guy's in a bubble! Like, who cares?
He causes a riot over it, because the Bubble Boy... overexerts himself trying to choke George.
He's choking George, and he still is saying, "Mopes! Mopes!" It's like, are you kidding me? You're actually hurting yourself now just to be, like, that's almost narcissistic, the point where...
Over a point that you know is ridiculous.
It's like he's actually hurting himself. I mean, like, wow, like...
Yeah, that's... Yeah. That's some extreme narcissism. It's the kind of narcissism that, like, it's destructive in your own life sort of thing. And the thing is that, you know, it's a sitcom, but, you know, George always ends up kind of all right out of the whole thing, you know. Well, you know, sometimes he has to act the opposite of everything he's ever done and all the rest. But, you know, he's got a steady job and he has good friends and all the rest. And it's not too terrible. Life's not too terrible for Georgie boy.
Let me ask you a question. This is kind of a geek question.
Those are my best kind of questions.
I guess for the viewers out there, like, we kind of like to cross platforms or genres or just sort of, you know, like one media to the next, like almost like what would happen if, so to speak. For instance, what would happen, for example, if, you know, you replaced Gandalf in Lord of the Rings with Qui-Gon. I don't know if you want to answer that now, but I do have a question.
Not much would change,
but I do have a question for you.
Okay.
If George Costanza were a character in Game of Thrones, what sort of fate would George R.R. Martin have for Costanza?
I think that George, he's not terrible enough to be put in power, but he's not such a good guy that he could kill it off. So I think he ends up in kind of like a major advisory role, where he looks out for himself, but he doesn't do the terrible things necessary to gain power.
Almost like Varys the Eunuch, in a way?
Yes, or Littlefinger, or someone like that.
Do you think they would send him on the Night's Watch?
No, I don't think so. I think George has his uses.
Okay. So,
he'd be smart enough not to do anything that would get him sent to the Night's Watch.
Yeah, no. I mean, thank you, Bradley. I've had that question kind of etched in my mind for a little while now. I mean, obviously, in the context of Seinfeld, George is definitely playing his own Game of Thrones, wherein, you know, he has certain, like, aspirations and goals, and he does what
his
he...
His goal is to one-up everybody.
I mean, take a look at the Pez Dispenser episode, the You've Got Hand, I guess you could say.
Yes. The Having Hand episode.
Like, he breaks up with his girlfriend just to power grab. Like, and she ends up wanting him more because of that. And so he goes around saying, like, I've got hand. And then, of course, you know, he didn't win this Game of Thrones because in the end, she one-ups him and kind of leaves him.
He gets hand.
He's going to need it, as they say.
Right.
Another thing I guess we could talk about is the Summer of George. I mean, that's such an important moment in George.
Yeah, the Summer of George.
Summer of George. I mean,
excited.
Talk about, you know, going so out of your own way to, like, not work, but also kind of, I mean, I guess to take it back even further, after Susan's, like, death, George has this almost, like an awakening, like, oh my god, I gotta get my life in order, like, I gotta do stuff, like, you know, this summer is gonna be the Summer of George, you know, I'm gonna change my ways. And what ends up happening during the Summer of George, Bradley?
He sits on his couch watching TV and has such brilliant innovations as putting a refrigerator into his Lazy Boy, so that way he doesn't have to get up to grab a soda.
I guess that's the one instance in lazy people are so, you know, progress is made by lazy people who want to make their lives easier. Like, he built a fridge in his Lazy Boy just so that his life could be easier. He could go through he doesn't have to go through the extra step of walking to the fridge.
Such things exist now. You can buy a Lazy Boy with a built-in fridge.
All thanks to George, I guess.
Yeah. You can't buy a bro. I don't think they sell those.
I mean, there you go. I mean, I guess one other classic moment of George, which, like, definitely left an impression on me, is his answering machine. Like, he tries to avoid getting dumped with because he wants to make a grand entrance at a party. And so in order to avoid being broken up with, he puts his energies into making this elaborate answering machine.
Right. And and it's so long that nobody's willing to sit through it to leave a message.
And you see Jerry on the other end just, like, looking, like, so angry. Just, like...
Right. And so that way she won't, yeah.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone. Where could I be? Yada, yada, yada. But anyways.
Yeah. That was from another TV show. I forget what it was called, but that was a reference to a TV show that neither you nor I know anything about.
Wait, isn't yada, yada, yada in Seinfeld or something like that? Or...
Yeah, it comes from Seinfeld.
Yeah, I mean, and she skips over, like, the most important parts. Or...
Yes, is well, yeah, because Elaine was telling a story about how she had this nice dinner with a guy, and yeah, and then yada 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 we're going out again tomorrow, or something like that. And so Jerry's like, you know, did you just yada yada sex? And Elaine says, yeah, I did. He goes, well, you just yada yada'd over the best part. And she says, no, I mentioned the bisque.
Oh, that's so terrible. I also thought of the double dipping bit with George.
The double dipping. Oh, yeah, well, I mean, like, yes, and he goes to such lengths to try to get a discount on a ticket.
Oh.
On the airplane ticket.
He gets a picture taken to him with him next to him. And he hopes that that's going to be a discount.
Yeah, and he tries to get a copy of a death certificate.
Yeah, that's one thing you don't want to do is at somebody's wake or funeral ask for a copy of a death certificate so that you can get a discount on an airline.
Yeah, so you can get $500 off the airfare.
Yeah. You could almost, like, I guess maybe we're entering conclusion territory right now. Or maybe this whole episode was one giant conclusion with a lot of examples. Like, this is what you don't do. But, yeah, like,
don't double dip the chip.
Don't double dip the chip. That's one thing, but, I mean, yeah, just watch a few episodes of Seinfeld, and whatever George is doing, don't do. There is one interesting...
Except in the opposite.
The opposite, and also, remember when he becomes abstinent, because his girlfriend has, yeah.
Yes, and he becomes abstinent and becomes brilliant.
That's another episode where we see George, like, becoming brilliant, and he, like, learns another language, and then it's... That was another great episode.
Yes, because the part of his mind that is normally devoted to trying to meet and sleep with beautiful women, which, namely all of it, is now devoted to other pursuits.
I guess the moral of that story, if there is any, is the less time you spend thinking about those kind of pursuits, the better focus you have and the less self-conscious you'll be in order to act and do what you gotta do, so...
Dating advice from Douglas.
I don't know if it's dating or advice. Advice is a dangerous thing to give, as the elves of Middle-earth say. Anyways, we'll have to return to Middle-earth sometime soon for the podcast, but do you have any other kind of final remarks about George or in summation kind of things?
No, how about you give us the summation this time, Douglas?
Just to take it full circle, because I love taking things full circle... There's a little bit of George in everybody. Remember that. There's a little bit of George in me. There's a little bit of George in you. not necessarily you, Bradley, but like you, the general you, the collective you. Although,
oh, no, there's a little bit of George in me.
There's a little bit of George. There's a little bit of George in everybody, and some more than others, as you say, which I guess is why we love George.
Yeah.
But also, we don't want to be him. So, I think we did good, Bradley. I'm proud of this.
All right, great. All right, well, thanks everybody for listening. And, tune in next time for more chat with Brad and Doug. Thank you and have a great week.